Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, living with bipolar, probably not something that most people have thought about unless you know or are currently living with the condition yourself. In actual fact, an estimated 1 in 50 people currently live with bipolar in Ireland today. So ahead of the organisation's World Bipolar Day this coming Saturday, I just wanted to chat to people today who actually live with the condition about how it affects them, I suppose the impact on day-to-day life, their family, and how much more awareness is needed to try and highlight the what's involved really with the condition. Bernadette is with us on the line today. Bernadette, good afternoon and thanks for joining us. Tell us about your experience, Bernadette.
Yeah, hi Andrea, great to be here and thanks for profiling the issue. And I suppose my experience is different to many in terms of I was diagnosed quite late in life. The majority of people get diagnosed in their 20s, whereas I got diagnosed at 47. And, you know, looking back on my life before that, you know, it was quite balanced, went to college, went overseas, did a master's and all the rest. And then it was kind of the 2000s, I started to experience kind of more personal stress and trauma in my life. My dad passed, my mum had a terminal diagnosis, and she actually passed 6 weeks before our wedding. So there was a lot of stress happening. Yeah. I don't know how I got through it. I guess I was in a bubble still. But afterwards, then, you know, I started to notice, you know, a lot of stress, just not able to coping with things, you know, where my brain just, you know, I just couldn't think straight. And, you know, from what I had gone through, people are saying, well, of course, you're going to be depressed because you've had so much loss. And the GP gave me antidepressants. They didn't work. And that continued. So I continued to struggle through life. And I started seeing a psychologist in John of God's in 2016. And my mood had changed. It was around Christmas time. My husband, my friends were like, is she okay? I was pretty hyper. I don't know if you like Christmas FM, but I love it.
Yeah.
But I was really loving it. I was like having it blaring in every room in the house, you know? And so not really normal behavior. So he said, okay, I'm coming with you to the next appointment. And he did. We talked about what was going on. And he actually at that point said, I think you may have bipolar. I'm going to set you up with a psychiatrist in January and take it from there. And then I saw the psychiatrist for most of the following year. We were on mood stabilizers. My moods were still going up, but they were, you know, balancing out, going down. And then by October, I had to just step out of work. It was like being in a washing machine. I just couldn't think straight at all. And I started then online, as you do, signing up to positivity courses because I wasn't thinking positively and I was so low. And I went to see him and he said, are you getting traction with, you know, you're doing yoga, you're doing cycling, you're doing acupuncture, you're doing hypnotherapy, everything. And I said, no. And so he said, I think you should be admitted. And which was quite a scary thought to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, Bernadette, listening, you know, to you and your story, a lot of us can probably identify, you know, and certainly with many parts of that, it's maybe not the level of extremes that we might think it is, or when we watch movies and see people, you know, living with bipolar, it's maybe not the level of the extremity that we thought.
No, and that's one thing, you know, in terms of dispelling myths, it's around how it is depicted in movies is so extreme. And there are extremities at times, you know, and that happens. But for a lot of us, it's not like that. For many people, they can go for long periods without. I unfortunately experience rapid cycles. But just before I go on to that, it's a very hard thing to diagnose. And this is one of the biggest problems, because as you said, a lot of what I've said, people say, I actually feel quite low. I can't think straight. So it's a very difficult one, because then when your mood lifts, who goes to the doctor to say, I'm in great form.
Yeah.
It's the last place you think of going, you know. So the fact that I was admitted they were able to observe my behaviour, and I wasn't on meds at the time. So they were able to observe, and I think within 3 weeks they made a diagnosis. But most people aren't in a hospital being observed. Well, and that's one of the big challenges with bipolar. And people suffer for many, many years before they actually get the diagnosis. And, do you know, as awful as it sounds when you get a diagnosis like that, I actually was quite relieved, because I was like, okay, well, now I can work with something, you know, and try and understand it, as it's quite complex, and it's not actually, I'm still trying to understand it, but at least you have something to kind of work with.
Well, the day that you're sat down and told, you need to be admitted, or you need to go to a psychiatric hospital, what was going through your head that day, Bernadette?
I think, like, he offered me outpatient, and I rang them about that, and that was going to be what I was doing already, an hour here, an hour there. So I kind of went, you know, you just want to, find a solution or what's happening. So it was hard. I waited for a month for that bed, and I unpacked a bag. I packed a bag. Maybe not so bad. People were saying you'd get worse in there. But by the time I got the call, I just immediately said, yes, I'm going. Because you know what? If I don't like it and it's really not for me, I can leave. You know, I'm going in voluntarily. So, and actually, you know, dispelling myths about psychiatric hospitals, it was an amazing place. I have friends still from that time, and probably in the end didn't want to come home in some ways, you know, but because, you know, they have occupational health programs, and, you know, a lot of, you know, you can do art and you can do yoga and you can do lots of things. So it's not, again, as we depicted in the movies.
Yeah.
Because I had those images too, you know, the big hallways and people in white coats and all of that, you know.
But well, that's why I asked the question, because I suppose today I want to try to dispel the myths about what's involved in getting the diagnosis. And like, as you said, you were actually relieved when you were sat down and told, listen, you have a bipolar condition.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because now I knew there's something, and I can try and understand it, and I can try and work with it, and I can see if there's medications or other therapies or you know, to work
so
with
that.
So
what is the management of it now, we'll say, for you, a couple of years on, Bernadette, day to day?
Yeah.
The treatment,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a few things. There's obviously medication. I'm on medication. I have a great psychiatrist, and that's really important that you have a psychiatrist that you trust, and he has your back, or she. So he's a really important person in my life. And then there's a whole psychological support, and I think it's really powerful and really important that we are having that piece. And just want to shout out to Aware. They're doing amazing things around bipolar. And if people go on the website, there's support groups, there's blogs, there's interviews, everything there. I go on an Aware support group with other people living with bipolar. So I'm literally the first time I met 8 other people that had bipolar on the Aware support group. And that's amazing, because some of them have similar experiences, some have different, but a lot of them have really rich insights, and they've been living with it for much longer. I kind of feel it's still a relatively recent diagnosis.
Yeah. Well, it is for you in your lifetime too. You mentioned you got it at what, 45?
47. Now, I'd like to flag something else up about that age thing. Because I've been wondering all along, was there any kind of link to menopause? Because I would have been in perimenopause at the time, and I'm very much in menopause now. And I've been trying to look at that. There's so little research out there, Andrea, globally. I think there's 16 academic research pieces. But a psychiatrist, an Irish psychiatrist, said the other day in a webinar that about 10% of bipolar diagnoses are made in women beyond the mid-40s, and they're seeing a peak in women around the menopause. And so there's clearly, I'm hearing it more, you know, on Instagram feeds.
Yeah,
and
we're hearing
from,
it, yeah.
So experts, there's very little detail about it.
You know, the need for more research.
They're certainly recognising that.
Yeah,
because
in
I know
that
somebody
area.
Else. Yeah, on my Aware group, she was diagnosed same age as me.
Okay.
So you're kind of going, so there's a, so the thing, but between the similarities between menopause and some of the bipolar, you know, there's a confusion, but yeah, maybe they're quite linked.
That's good. Yeah, it's an interesting point for sure, Bernadette. Stay with us because Liam has got in touch as well, and I want to bring Liam in on this because you've gone through something similar, Liam.
Yeah, I could relate to a lot of what Bernadette said. A couple of differentiations, I suppose, with me. I couldn't pinpoint I was getting these severe depressive episodes when I was 16 or 17. And it went on till for the next 10 years. I couldn't really pinpoint that things were, there was nothing going on in my life externally that you know, warranted these low moods. So eventually in 2009, I attended my GP, but I only ever attended him for the first few years depressed. So he treated me accordingly with the antidepressants. And as Bernadette said, it's so difficult to get the diagnosis because, like you were mentioning there, we call it, I'm bipolar type 2, so my hypomania, it wasn't as evident as they'd showed or as dramatic in TV shows. Mine was just like excess talking, spending a lot of money, no need for sleep, huge amount of energy. So I took, luckily now I had a good doctor, and it was only one day when I went in for a physical issue and he kind of twigged that I was a little high. So I eventually got my diagnosis in 2013 then.
I think it's probably the fact that there's maybe various different types or of bipolar, like that you've described, Liam, that I'd say a lot of us probably just aren't aware of that.
Yeah, look, there's type 2, which I am, there's type 1. I suppose the differentiation between the two of them is the level of mania. So I think with bipolar type 1, the mania escalates very quickly and generally people need to be hospitalised and they can kind of just lose touch with reality. Some psychosis as well. With me, unless you didn't know me, you would think, you know, a bit grandiose. They could easily just be personality traits, but I've been fortunate now. The mood stabilizing medication I take has worked very well the last 6 years. There was a couple of rough lessons along the way. I came off medication. I got very ill after coming off it. So I'm lucky though. Like, not everyone has their bipolar under control. It's quite individual and specific. Like, some people rapid cycle. Some people, their mania is, there's more mania than depressive episodes. For me, it was quite like, I could have 9 months depressed, 5 months hypomania. So it's so individual to everyone. But like Bernadette was saying, our aware is doing a lot of good work and they have a specific bipolar, living with bipolar program as well. So from what I'm hearing that's very good.
Yeah. Was it a relief to get the diagnosis, Liam?
Do you know what? At the time I was severely depressed and it didn't really dawn on me. I just felt I had fallen out of love with life and I just wanted to take my own life, really. It didn't really dawn on me. But I think over time, the enormity of accepting the condition, because it is a difficult one to accept. And yeah, I was late 20s at the time. I didn't know, I'm from Ballyhonus. I felt like I was the only bipolar person in Ballyhonus. I didn't know anybody else who was bipolar. I felt further stigmatized, and I think that stigma then led to me getting well, but then led to me coming off medications. And look, it's a learning curve, but yeah, I think the key is getting the diagnosis. You know, at least once I did get the diagnosis, even though I didn't care at the time, I had a couple of bumps on the road, but yeah, I've been well 6 years now.
Yeah, so good.
I'm fortunate now. Yeah,
and I suppose as well, like, you know, that feeling that you talked about, Liam, of kind of nearly isolation and probably the impact of that when you thought maybe you were the only person, and obviously you're not, but when you kind of thought that in your younger years, and maybe that stigma that's maybe often attached to it as well. Was it hard to talk to friends and family about it?
It was difficult because I was from, I suppose, 1999 to 2009. So I had 10 years of episodes. I just, tried to live through them. I had a good cousin. So he was the first one I disclosed it. And he kind of encouraged me to go to my GP in 2009. I took antidepressants. But I suppose the only issue with the antidepressants was it's fine for treating, you know, regular depression. But if you give somebody that's bipolar antidepressants, it will bring the mood up, but then it brings your mood too high and then you ended up having a medication high and then you'll crash again. So I was fortunate. Now, I like, as part of my treatment plan, I didn't get admitted, but there was a daycare centre in the town next to Ballyhonus, and I was just fortunate. I had two good nurses and a good psychiatrist, and then I did all the talk therapy at the time. I did the cognitive behavioural therapy, psychology. I did it all. No, I haven't done any talk therapy the last 5 or 6 years. I've parked it for now. But
yeah,
look, I'm well the last 6 years, but there's no, it's like a lot of long-term health conditions. There's no saying that you'll never have a relapse. So, you know, doing stuff like this, to just, because you can become complacent. I find that, you know, you almost, you know, and even these days I have thoughts of, you know, oh, sure, maybe I do fine not taking that medication. And, you know, you just have to listen to yourself and look at it. In the past, coming off medication has been detrimental. So, yeah, it's not something I'm going to do.
Yeah. But what about you, Bernadette? Like, how, for you, navigating chatting to family and friends, how was that?
I actually have been really open about it from the get-go, really. And quite a small family. So, you know, yeah, no, that was totally, totally fine, to be honest. It was interesting, though, a few years later, I wrote a blog and my cousin in Limerick had seen it. And then she contacted me and said, did you know Dad is bipolar? And I never knew it. And it just, you know, shows that in families, particularly going back, you know, that it actually was quite hidden. Mm. And that was kind of a big insight for me, because I just didn't think there was any issues, you know, with
how do we, how do we address that? Like, I know obviously there's the World Bipolar Day on Saturday, and we're, I'm chatting obviously to yourself and Liam here today, and I found it really insightful, and just the education, I think, from chatting to you both and hearing your experiences in the show. But like, how do we tell people a little bit more about what day-to-day living with bipolar is like?
It's quite difficult, really, because I think in society now we're comfortable with the story of, you know, John was depressed for a couple of months, he was feeling a bit low, and then he took up running and he's a lot better now. And I think, you know, we're comfortable with that. But I think if you say to somebody that, okay, this person is bipolar, they've been in and out of a psychiatric hospital the last 3 or 4 years, I don't think we're as comfortable with that. We haven't, you know, the stigma is lifting, but, you know, it still is a bit, it still is a bit hidden. That we have a way to go, but like, what more can you do? Only just kind of do what Aware is doing, do talks like this. I wrote a book on my experience, just try to make awareness, just try to awareness. There is more awareness of it, like, you know, and like Bernadette, you know, it is kind of funny in a way that once I came out about my story, you know, I found out then there was family members and that had it. There was friends of mine that had it. So sometimes it just takes one person. And look, the nice side of this is often doing shows like this, you know, somebody might send you a Facebook message and say, oh, my son is going through that, and what can I do? And a lot of the time it is just waiting for the moves, maintenance, medication to kick in. But it can be scary. But the reason is, like, 20 years ago, you know, when we were in school, there was no mention of depression.
No.
Nobody spoke about it.
Yeah.
But anyone I'm talking to that's in their early 20s and have got a bipolar diagnosis, they're so far ahead of the curve, because the earlier you get the diagnosis, the quicker you can get it under control. The quicker you get it under control, the less relapses you'll have. So I was 30, so I was a bit younger than Bernadette, but it still was troublesome. So yeah, it's just so important to get that diagnosis.
Well, I think you've both done a great service today in raising awareness and talking about your experience, and I do appreciate you both being so open and honest, you know, and sharing your story with us here today in the show. Liam and Bernadette, thanks a million to you both for joining us in the programme. I do want to mention, because both Liam and Bernadette talked about Aware as well, and for anybody listening to us today, if you want more details, you can get their website aware.ie, or their free phone number either, actually, that's 1800 80 48 48, or there's also the Samaritans as well on 116123. If you want to get in touch with us about this, the email address is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan, weekdays at midday,
brought to you by Active Iron
on Newstalk.